Pass the grace You know, as God began to deal with me about Oakland, I want to remind you this, that we are a movement and not a monument. I want you to know that somebody is going to be held accountable because we're going to raise up a banner. Just like the blood-stained banner, hallelujah, that the Black Panthers had before, there is about to be a movement. We're not going to just be quiet. It's not just this murder, but it's other murders. Somebody needs to say something. This city got to change, and we are going to be the voice that's going to do it. And if I got somebody out here that is with me, just shout right now, I ain't scared.
Put them in arm locks and took them out the door. So you might say this is a small step forward for our movement, but it's an important step. And next time we do this, hopefully there'll be dozens, maybe hundreds of us to continue the struggle that says no justice, no peace. We need to make it impossible for these cops and their protectors to continue to murder people. And I want to say a word about that because we are gradually unwinding the film. What happened to Alan Bluford on May the 6th. And you know, people talk about we're not doing racial profiling in Oakland, we're not doing stop and frisk. But Alan and his two friends were stopped to be frisked because they were young black men on the street in East Oakland at night. And that was their crime. And the cops ran up on them, they took them, they pushed them down on the curb. Alan decided he was having none of this. And he ran away. And instead of just letting them go, no big deal, the cops ran after him, chased him for 3 blocks. And Alan is running away. And Alan runs up the driveway. And there's a curb there. And he hits it, he falls. And he falls on his back. And this murderer, Mazzo, comes up to him and he stands over Alan, lying on his back on the ground. Bam! Bam! That's not murder. Shooting Alan Bluford like a dog in the street. In fact, they wouldn't shoot a dog that way. That's what happened. That's why we're here. But I want to be clear about why that happened. Talking about police abuse, and they talk about that's a bad cop, that's a brutal cop, that's a racist cop, that's a poorly trained cop, that's a poorly supervised cop. You know, you read about these cases the last couple days in the newspaper, in the Chronicle, and they were the police official from Hayward asking how it comes to be that when people have encounters with the police, they wind up dead. Why the police keep shooting and shooting? And you know what that cop said? He said, that's what we're trained to do. That's what we're supposed to do. And I want to take that because that's what OPD is trained to do. It's not like this aberrant situation. We live in a society, as you all know, where the economic crisis continues, where the unemployment rate among young black men in Oakland is 50%, when a third of the young black and Latino men who enter high school in Oakland, a third of them graduate 4 years later. There's no job. McDonald's looks good from that perspective. There's no job. There's no education. There's poor housing. There's inadequate medical care. And is it surprising that people rebel against that? This is one form of rebellion. But when young people who are disgusted by their lot in life, who cannot stand the way they're treated, become what some folks call antisocial, you know, or just rebellious, that's another form of rebellion. And it's the job of the police. It's their job. It's not an aberration to put that down, to terrorize people, to scare people, to brutalize people, and every so often, and too often, to murder people in the street. That's the lesson that's planted by OPG and these other cops around the country. So to me, the takeaway from this is not simply the demand
on the corner. California. You don't hear about the worst cops in L.A., all that stuff. October 1994, I moved to
Oakland. How you been?
June 1995, I was in a Cadillac with a 14-year-old friend of mine. I was 15 at the time. We were getting chased by the police. I tried to outrun a cop in a car. The cop ran in front of our car, jumped out. Both officers, can't say it's black or white, but it was a black pig and a white pig, jumped out of their car and emptied 30-plus shots into a Cadillac filled with two teenagers. They tried to shoot us so many times, a bullet burnt a piece of hair off the side of my head. They left bullets in the windshield, in the headrest. My mother said she saw the car with so many bullet holes in the car, she didn't even go to the hospital because she just knew I was dead. And then they turned around and charged me with $5 million. This is how these things operate, David. So when people come up here and we say that we fight against cops, you had a cop out here earlier told me, I don't know him when I say he's a cop killer. They charge you with an accessory if you know about a crime and then don't speak on it. You go to jail just like the one who committed this crime. So when you sit in this office with these inner cops that you know murder child and you don't speak on it, you are just as guilty as him. So wherever you at, the cops killer. They can beat against that cop killer when you get here. So, the only way we're going to stop this shit out here every day, all day, make them uncomfortable. And ask for 3 hours when we're going to leave. We're going to leave and they stop killing our children out here.
My own unit, ILWU, was born out of the blood
please hide me or under the rock. Please hide me or under the rock. Please hide me, Lord, all on the day. But the rock cried out, I can't hide you, the rock cried out. I can't hide you, the rock cried out. I ain't gonna hide you down. All on that day, I said, Rock, what's the matter with you, Rock? Don't you see I need you, Rock? Lord, 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 all on that day.
Oh, yeah.
Later on in the conversation, started talking about his work around police brutality. And, of course, we kicked off the show talking about what's going on in New York. And I think a lot of what John has to say over the next few minutes applies all the way across. And so here's excerpts from our conversation talking about police brutality. And, you know, we could go on and on just talking about voting to the point that we forget that John Burris is also, you know, stellar in his defense and fighting what I think has also been a scourge in this country for a very long time, police terrorism, police brutality, police misconduct. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the landmark cases that you've been involved in, Rodney King, where the anniversary is coming up at the end of April, Tupac Shakur, and, of course, Oscar Grant. One would think that from Rodney King to Oscar Grant, that there would have been vast improvement and that we would not be having these type of discussions. Yet, we see all over the country, from Stop and Frisk in New York to the extrajudicial reports that came out of the Malcolm X grassroots movement that show that every 36 hours, somebody black is killed by law enforcement, on down to, you know, what Latinos are dealing with detention centers and the increasing privatization of jails, et cetera, et cetera. Why are we at this point, considering that people like yourselves have fought, and I think fought a very good battle 20 years ago? You know, we don't even have to go back to the 60s, just some of the results of 20 years ago. How do we move backwards instead of forwards?
Very frustrating for me. I have been involved in police misconduct cases since 79. The most significant case, aside from those that you mentioned, them as the most significant cases that I've had to deal with, because the rioters case.
The rioters, yes, yes.
Because in that case, we're really trying to deal with policy. We're really trying to change the culture. And we have found that it's extraordinarily difficult, but because there's resistance.
Resistance where?
Resistance within an organization. Now, as I watched the civil rights movement as I was growing up from the safety of my home, I was struck by the March on Selma. I was struck by the police use of law enforcement, and that sort of has always been with me. People say, how did you get to do this? Well, I can remember when I was a kid and I saw this, and it impacted me in major ways. And so it is one of these issues for me. The most one that I'm most engrossed in is why is it that that police treat people the way they do, particularly African American community? And it is one of these things I have fought. I wrote a book back in
Blue versus Black.
Blue versus Black. Let's end the conflict between cops and minorities. And then I was wrestling with this problem. Why is it we have this conflict? Why is it that a young police officer, and that's just a function of the Rodney King case, why a young police officer like Timothy Wynn, who by all accounts was a decent young man, the kind of guy I went to high school with, and he grew up in Kansas, he looked like he had an integrated community, then how could he get caught in a situation where he is beating Rodney King unmercifully? I couldn't reconcile that. And I took the deposition of him, and I kept answering this question. So I started working and thinking about this issue and what can be done. And in the book, I kind of went through a lot of different scenarios. And what I come up with is that sometimes, in some places, the culture of a department transcends everything. If that department has a culture of police brutality, of police misconduct, it is it will engage that conduct, and there's no mechanism to stop it, because at the end of the day, they want to be regulated by themselves. And if they don't have a mechanism within there to hold each other accountable, they will not allow the public to do it.
Now, you know, more recently we had the manifesto and all the drama around Christopher Donner, the L.A. police officer, and that's a case I've been following pretty closely on a couple of fronts. But before I get to questions on that,
DJ Mouse wants to jump in and say something about segueing to the Vatican, because this faith, this belief business, well, you know, who says don't know? If you don't know right from wrong, you're not going to be able to pick the right one. And if you do, you don't need one to tell you. So, oh, yeah, that's where I was going to segue to some pie in the sky hooey biz, because the Pope's gone underground. This happened before. Marcinkus hid out in the Vatican with Italian investigators dropping like flies. It was, let's call it, Vatican Bank scandal. And the interface with the child abuse scandal is that the business is run from the same points, the crown, the church, you know, church and state, in this case of Canada, where you have the Queen, eyewitness to 10 murdered Indian children, the warrant was issued to Peter Montague within the last week at the RCMP in British Columbia, and they are onto his shit. So
we heard from maybe six black LA police officers. Two of them actually came on the air, and then others wrote letters and explained, and all of them said that the culture in the department has been that way for a long time. And one of the black officers that we had on air talked about the fact that the way that this has been perpetuated, meaning the discrimination that would get people to be outrageously angry like this guy was, has been that, you know, it's brothers and fathers hiring, you know, uncles and sons, and that has been this old boy network. And in the case of L.A., he went point by point and talked about that particular division and talked about how it's just really been literally an old boy and now old girl and boy network, but it's all coming from the same seed. With that being said, why haven't we been able to break those types of scenarios up to help change that culture?
You know, looking in, it's a challenge. During the Rodney King case, I had a chance to do a lot of work in LAPD and around LAPD. And it operates from the mentality of an occupying force. It's them and it's us. Mm-hmm. And when you have that mentality, you don't respect the community, and you do whatever you need to do to protect and insulate yourself from the community. And I'll give you an example. In the Rodney King case, if you look at the video, you'll have the four officers who were engaged in the brutality. Off to the right, there were two, maybe four other police officers. These officers were LA Unified police officers, okay? They all turned their backs, and they were all black officers. They all turned their backs. Ultimately, as I got into the case, one of the kids, and they were young, very young guys at the time, knew a friend of mine, and he contacted him. And I got a chance to go talk to this young man. And he was told me that they were totally afraid to say anything because they would lose their job. The code of silence would have been such that they would have been ostracized in the department. And so they, in order to keep their job, they had to keep their mouth shut. And they witnessed this beating. Now, when I started doing work, we had a lot of cases like that. And part of what we tried to do in the Ryder's case was put a provision in the agreement that would cause officers to come forward on a confidential basis and talk about the possible misconduct. Unfortunately, as we've done that, very few officers have come forward. Right. And that is because, they're much more interested in protecting themselves in many ways than in following the law. I don't mean that for everyone, but what I have always saw was very good officers who themselves would not engage in misconduct, but they wouldn't tell on another officer.
And we have some of the Rodney King stuff playing in the background so people can kind of see some of the 56 blows that the late Rodney King, unfortunately, had to endure.
Well, in that meeting, there were these guys who saw it, but not one officer gave any testimony in any way that challenged the conduct that was taking place. And it was an eye-opener for me.
Well, let me ask you this, if you can turn the light back on, because we've got people filming. Thanks. One of the officers talked, he insisted that he had to come on the air anonymously, and he said that he didn't want his name to be known because he was afraid for his kids. You said for his kids in particular. And what was explained is that it's almost like a prison or gang culture within some of the forces, in the sense that literally folks will rat pack and take you out. It's not just you'll lose your job. You know, physical violence can come up on you. We've heard that a couple of times. And, you know, when I look at the fact that at the same time this Christopher Darner thing was happening, you had this rogue gang in the L.A. Sheriff Department, the Jump Out Boys, where seven of them were being let go. We know that when we had done stuff, that they had these social clubs that had existed in some of these departments for years that acted like gangs, and sometimes they went up against each other. And we talked about that with the officers. How come L.A. Sheriff and LAPD will actually have squads? So this whole thing, it just seems crazy and bizarre. But when I'm talking to some of these officers, they're like, well, this is just a way in which people, they say this is the way it is. And in some cases, they say it actually brings them together, makes them bond. I mean, which is crazy to me.
I think beatings and shootings bond officers together.
Really?
Unfortunately, it does. I don't think, my history has demonstrated to me, officers are not regretful of killing people. They're not regretful. It is a kind of a badge of it. Now, they may, and they get a day off, but I'm going to tell you, when they get amongst themselves, it's a badge.
And that's what the Jump Out Boys were doing in L.A.
And so but see, I don't know that I, as an outsider, can deal with that kind of mentality. It's really the department itself has to deal with it if it wants to deal with it. And part of what we wanted to do...
Well, we're paying for that department.
Well, look, you got to understand, the most powerful entity in most cities is the police unions.
That's right.
These people are powerful, and they negotiate the best deals for themselves, and they take the public money, and they abuse the public money in many ways by overtime and stuff like this. But public officials are literally afraid of these people, because these entities, and it's not just OPD, it's all of them, you know, because people are concerned about public safety. Mm-hmm. And they need to know that the police are going to be there when you call. And so you call, and you think if you do something that's caused them not going to be there, then you want to make sure that issue is taken care of. Just for example, before I got here, I was being interviewed by the New York Times around the case here. And part of the thing that was discussed, that over the last year, OPD had made fewer stops than they had in previous years. And the question is, why is that? Well, you know, it's not because there's a fewer police officers. It's a function of officers deciding that they're not going to get out of the car to make that stop. They're not going to make this comment. Now, and so what you have is what they call depolicing. Depolicing is a concept that people know about. Mm-hmm. No one, you know, it's like the boogeyman. Nobody wants to talk about these things.
Right.
But I see these things and run upon them all the time, and they are fundamentally ingrained. Now, we hope, we've always, and I'm optimistic about this, even though I'm 10 years down in this case, that we hope that we can ultimately get to the point where the police culture changes to the point where they're not at war with the individual community and view them as partners. And because if you can't do it, you're not going to decrease crime and you're not going to solve crime.
Right.
The community will not respond to you if they don't respect you, and they don't respect you if you mistreat them.
Now, when you were going to school, it seemed like the goal was to get more black and brown officers and people that would reflect the community. Now you can go to New York City. You can go to L.A. The majority of people that are in these forces are black and brown. Yet the problems in some cases have increased. How is it happening when we now have our own there?
I don't know that that is totally true. I, you know, one thing we do know this, if you look at the data, women do not engage, for the most part, in excessive force or the office shooting. They are, they just have a way of diffusing situation. Men, it becomes a mano-mano kind of thing, or they have this badge and they have this authority. I don't, unfortunately, I can't say that it's less because there's black officers or not. I've always thought, but I will say this, there are black officers who come from the community, who understand the community. They don't generally get involved in police misconduct cases. Now, they are not telling on anyone. They're not doing that. But they're not engaging in the same conduct. So I always thought, and still believe, that who you select, where you select them from, is important. I mean, if you're going to be in an urban environment, you need people in the department who have been in urban environments, who have lived amongst people, who understand the language, who understand the jingle, who understand the walk, and are not intimidated by it or not making fun of it. Because what you had in the Rodney King case, you had one of the officers, these officers communicating back and forth in the most derogatory language, which they didn't respect the community. And so what you have with young people growing up, I mean, their hair changes, the pants wear change, the clothes, everything changes. And you can't apply a standard of evaluating that based upon a standard where you live and up in the mountains somewhere.
Right.
And so these are the challenges, as I always maintain. You have to hire people who have some appreciation for the community and are not intimidated by the community.
One of the hallmarks of both OPD and LAPD was that at a particular point in time, they deliberately recruited officers who had racial insensitivity and hostility from the South.
Right.
And we saw that. Has that continued in some ways? Maybe not in the South, but now you have more. It would be much more clandestine, you know, neo-Nazi.
We haven't a chance to have a turnover in the apartments, and I've been around here at least twice. We don't really have people who come from the South in many ways. That's not it. People come from suburbs. They come from small towns.
Right.
Some come from urban environments. But what I don't think is they have an appreciation for the community in which they come to. Now, I don't believe officers come in necessarily with a bias to hurt people. I just don't have that view. I mean, I think I've seen a lot of these people, and they seem like pretty decent young people when they come in.
Right.
It's just that the culture they come into changes them. As they say, you know, now that you've been to the academy, forget what you learned there. This is how we do it on the streets. And that's how the Ryder's case came about, because this young officer, Bats, came to Oakland and he wanted to be an officer. You know, Oakland is a great place to be an officer because they pay very well. I mean, these police officers are paid extraordinarily well, and it doesn't require a lot of education to do.
Right. For people who don't know about the Ryder's case, maybe we can take a little look at it. We have a clip. We don't have the clip?
No problem. Ryder's is a case that happened in 2000 with these, a minimum of four officers that are riding around the community, doing policing where they were illegally stopping people, planting drugs on them, beating them up, making false statements, and many people went to jail. We represented represented 120 people in that case. But ultimately, what we did was enter into an agreement called a negotiated settlement agreement that provided for an effort to reform the department with the independent monitoring and with myself working in. So it was a unique effort on our part to try to reform a department with our own wherewithal. And at that time, the police officers who were involved in working through this, I thought were outstanding people. And we had a good collegial relationship. But they weren't the ones that had to work to get it done.
Right.
Now, that case came about because of the message that was sent out to the officers by the mayor at the time and the police chief. I don't care how you get it done, just do it. And when you send that kind of message out, These are young men, for the most part. I wouldn't call them the highly sophisticated, educated men, and they just did what God did. And it was a mess in the sense that a young officer comes in who wanted to be a police officer. All of a sudden, he gets assigned to these guys who were known as the Riders, who were just criminals. And so I got involved in that case. And so we have been trying for the last almost 10 years since 2003 to implement this. And more recently, the court has going to appoint a compliance director. That should happen today. There's a lot of information that goes out on this case, but I think on balance that me and my co-counsel, we have tried to work with the department because we really do want it to work.
Right.
We want it to work, and we don't want people killed that shouldn't be killed. We don't want people beaten up who shouldn't be beaten up. And we don't want people stopped just because they're race.
Right.
They're race. And these are fundamental issues. Or having their guns pointed at them when the guns shouldn't be pointed at them. And so these are areas that we work extraordinarily hard on and trying to get the department to appreciate this. Now, this is open. My practice is all over Northern California.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. Going back to Donna in another situation. During the pursuit for this XLA officer, they shot two Latino women. They said it was two, but it was actually six officers that did it. And then you had a young man, a surfer, who was shot by two officers after he was turned around by the officers that were doing the shooting of the Latina. And when he went down, another police department shot him. In both cases, they weren't told anything. The women didn't know what was happening. I think it was something like 40 to 50 rounds shot in the back of the truck. So I've been calling LAPD almost every other day to at least find out the names of the officers. And they keep telling me, we don't have the names. We don't know the names. What's going to be the punishment for the officers? And they keep saying it's under investigation. And I wanted to know, one, is that the procedure normally, or is that connected to the officer's Bill of Rights, which has been enhanced over the years, and maybe people can explain how that all works.
You can give officers names out who have been involved in incidents.
They won't do that down there.
Well, you know,
maybe I need you to call.
This issue is highly controversial, and here's what happens when there is a highly charged situation. Officers tend to panic and go up and sort of ignore their training, and they just go into a bona fide pursuit. Just like we had the four officers who were killed in Oakland. Those officers should not have been killed. But that was because the officers were so upset that one person had been killed that they just forgot their training and barged into a room. Mm-hmm. Okay? And then they get killed. They shouldn't have done that. I mean, everybody knows you shouldn't have done that.
Right.
Now, here's what we got. We got all these other people being killed. You're trying to pursue this guy. There's no reason why you open fire on people who haven't posed any danger to you, and you don't know who they are.
Listening to our conversation with John Burris, we're going to stop it there because we got to get ready to get on out of here. Hopefully you enjoyed it. We will be back.
Oh, yes, that was the morning mix for this morning.
So I run to the river. It was boiling around to the sea. It was boiling around to the sea. It was boiling all on that day. So I run to the Lord.